While Americans seem to be increasingly taken with a spiritual bounty of the East, it's not always a path of incense and lotus blossoms. In the late 1960s, things were starting to go south for the Beatles. They needed something to bring them together before fame and fortune tore them apart. So along with their wives, girlfriends, and an entourage that included a few big names from the popular culture world, they headed to the ashram of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi in Rishikesh, India. It was a move that changed their lives, their music, and American culture forever. Bob Spitz writes about the Beatles' time in India and a whole lot more in his book, The Beatles, The Biography. Spitz told Ann Strangechamps that the ashram was a blissful environment for the Beatles.
It was almost like a little camp. They all had little bunks. They called them bungalows, but they were anything but that. They were more like little barracks. Very stark. And the Beatles immediately took to wearing the long flowing robes and the garb that the Maharishi had worn. And they really loved it quite a bit. It was very, very freeing spiritually for them.
How disciplined was this place? I mean, were they supposed to spend a certain amount of time every day meditating?
They were, and they did. They did to some extent. Ringo fell out very quickly, and Paul got bored and read. But John and George took it very seriously. I mean, they took it more than seriously. John was meditating 6 hours a day. He really felt that he was on some kind of otherworldly spiritual plateau, and it was very freeing for him. And the Beatles did what only the Beatles could have done in such a place. They wrote. They wrote like madmen. They wrote more songs at the ashram in Rishikesh, I think, than at any other point in their lives. Paul couldn't stop writing. The songs were just flowing off of his pen.
Oh, so what songs in particular came out of their time at the ashram?
They wrote the entire White Album there. And they wrote it very quickly. I mean, all those songs came within days of getting there. They couldn't stop. I know that one night they all went down into a village that was down a very steep cliff. And the Maharishi led the way, and everybody in their flowing robes, and there must have been about 30 people, walked behind him. And Paul walked at the back with his guitar, singing a new song that went, "Obladi, Obada, Life Goes On," which he had just written, and which everybody sang as they walked at dusk down into this village.
The songs they wrote during that time refer to the experiences they were having at the ashram?
Not really. The only thing that came out of it that was from the ashram was Dear Prudence, which was a paean to Mia Farrow's sister Prudence, who was also at the ashram. Mia Farrow was there as well. She had just been divorced from Frank Sinatra, and she was in a pitiful state. In fact, the only person who was in a more pitiful state than Mia at the time was her sister Prudence, who was locked in a room having a nervous breakdown. I think they saw her one or two times the entire time they were there. Otherwise, she was just this spiritual existence in a room that they heard. And so they wrote this song, Dear Prudence, trying to lure her out of her room. And in fact, George and John sang it at the door of her room, trying to lure her out.
The sun is up, the sky is blue, it's beautiful, I'm so
that was basically all that really reflected their stay there. But all of those songs were of a very definite piece. They all sounded very similar. They all had an edge to them. And I always felt that they were a real release from the craziness of Beatlemania in London, just pouring out of them by the time they got to this blissful little corner of the world.
Do you think all that meditating, all that time spent focusing on some higher ground affected them?
Yes, George especially. I think George grew up there. George was, well, I mean, everyone knew he was the little boy of the Beatles, but George also acted like a little boy up until that time. He was what they referred to as the cheeky member of their group, and he was exactly that. He was a smart aleck and a difficult guy. But when he discovered meditation and he began to look inward, George grew very serious, and he grew up quite a bit, and his interests expanded.
I look at you all, see the love there that's sleeping. While my guitar gently weeps. And look at you all. Still my guitar.
George had never been a reader before this. He took his marriage very seriously at the time as well. He had been, again, unbeknownst to a lot of people, the runaround of the Beatles, even though he was married to Patty Boyd. And all of that started to change when he left. And I think it was because of meditation. George took it very seriously. In fact, you know, he did all the way to the end of his life.
So why did the Beatles go home? What made them leave India?
A friend of the Beatles showed up after about 3 weeks. His name was Magic Alex. Magic Alex was kind of a fantasist who had latched on to the Beatles. He was a supposed inventor of things like talking wallpaper or speakers that you could put in your cheeks, all things that never materialized. But the Beatles paid him huge sums of money because they thought he was amusing them, that he would be inventing all these things and they would hold the patents on them. Alex was nothing more than a con man and had found, you know, a great source of money for his cons. Nevertheless, he was a troublemaker too and showed up in India essentially to get the Beatles out of there, to get them back to London where he could prey on them again. And he very swiftly told George and John, the most devout of the Maharishi's followers, that the Maharishi was having an affair with a 22-year-old nurse from America, from L.A., that he was preying on the young girls. And
did he make this up out of whole cloth? Because there had been rumors about that.
He did not. Years later, someone told me, and I know this to be true, that John found out for a fact that it actually happened. And they left. They left immediately. Actually, they stayed up all night. Ringo had decamped early. Ringo couldn't take the food in India, and his wife was afraid of the bugs. Paul left with Jane after about 3 weeks. He just grew bored. He said he'd had enough. It was a good experience, but he was going home. John and George stayed, and it was unclear how long they were going to be there. But when they got the news of the Maharishi's supposed dalliance, they stayed up all night debating whether or not this could be true. George was insisting that it wasn't. And then he began to doubt the Maharishi. And John had said that once George doubted the Maharishi, he knew that they were in big trouble. And they left the next morning. They stomped out. They told the Maharishi they were leaving, but they wouldn't tell him why. And he kept following them, crying in their wake, saying, why, just tell me. And John very famously turned around and said, if you're such a holy man, you'll know why. We don't have to tell you. You already know. And they left. They had one more song to write that they wrote in the car as they were leaving. John wrote a song called Sexy Sadie, but it wasn't at all called Sexy Sadie at the time. It was called Maharishi, and it was not just nasty, but vile.
It was a revenge song.
Oh, it was. It was not just a revenge song. John was devastated. I mean, his heart was broken. He had trusted this man, and he felt like he was getting good spiritual information from him that he intended to use when he got back to London, and now he didn't know what to do. The Maharishi was no different than anyone else in his life, his mother and his father and all the other people, Stuart Sutcliffe, who had abandoned him by either dying or leaving.
How did he come to call the song Sexy Sadie?
Because George insisted they couldn't do that to the Maharishi. Insisted. And so it was their supposed little joke that they would change it to Sexy Sadie, which they just made up on the spot as opposed to Maharishi. And that was the last song that came out of that little time spent in India, in Rishikesh.
Sexy Sadie, what have you done?
Spitz says the time spent in India launched the Beatles into adulthood. George practiced meditation until the end of his life. Bob Spitz is the author of The Beatles, the biography. He talked to Van Strangchamps.
Sexy Sadie, oh, you broke the rules one sunny day. The world was waiting for the lover.